how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our directions. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a new way of life which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose, in a general way, what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to follow directions. At some of these, you may balk. You may think you can find an easier, softer way. We doubt if you can. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us had tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we are dealing with cocaine, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for you. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. You must find him now. Half measures will avail you nothing. You stand at the turning point. Throw yourself under his protection and care with complete abandon. Now we think you can take it. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as your program of recovery. 1, we admitted that we were powerless over cocaine and all other mind-altering drugs, and our lives had become unmanageable. 2, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, over to the care and direction of God as we understood him. 4, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we were entirely ready, entirely willing that God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly on our knees, asked him to remove our shortcomings, holding nothing back. 8, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make a complete amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our contact with God, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And then 12, having had a spiritual awakening, a spiritual experience as a result of this course of action, we tried to carry this message to others, especially addicts, and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. You may exclaim, "What an order. I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles that we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description to the alcoholic, the addict, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after have been designed to sell you 3 pertinent ideas. A, that you're an addict and cannot manage your own life. B, that probably no human power can relieve your addiction. C, that God can and will. If you are not convinced on these vital issues, you ought to reread the book to this point. If you are not convinced on these vital issues, you ought to reread the book to this point or else throw it away. If you are convinced, you are now at step 3, which is that you make a decision to turn your will and your life over to God as you understand them. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do?
Thank you. My mother would resent that, I think. Well, I can tell already we need to get rid of this. Evening, everybody. My name is Mark Houston. I'm a recovered alcoholic and cocaine addict. And I sobered up the morning of October 19th of 1982, and I'm very, very grateful for that. It's good to be here. A lot of familiar faces when I got moved down to Texas. I was thinking of Carrie and Carson and Dick and Chris, and we were up in Kerrville and being zealots with the big book and carrying a message and trying to put it places people didn't want it and it wouldn't fit. And that's okay. I'm glad we did all those kinds of things. I always reflect around. October's a interesting month for me. I celebrate. It's a month of beginnings and endings because my belly button birthday is the 14th. For those of you who are interested, I turn 62. And my sobriety birthday is the 19th, and there's a third date that I celebrate, which is October 21st of 1995, was when my last divorce was final. I haven't found necessary to get married since. So. I had a penchant for getting married. What can I say? It's untreated alcoholism has many faces. So, well, here, let me ask a question. How many of you have been married more than once? Outside of Carrie, of course, but... Come on, raise the hands up. Yeah, see what I mean? I'm not the only one that suffered from that, see? You take alcohol and cocaine away from me, I'm going to something else. See? If you sit in this room, you think you can get this thing by osmosis, you're an idiot. It's an interior change that's brought about through a process we have to go through, you know? It don't come through any guru, blah, blah, blah. It comes through taking a specific, clear-cut course of action to bring about an interior change. So you begin to have a conscious contact, a relationship with that which created you. Call it God, call it what you want. But it's real, and you know it, and you take that out into the world, and nothing else, as far as I can tell, works. Somewhere in here, I don't think they tell us that, and you first come in the room, you get this idea of somehow this is going to happen on an exterior level, outside coming in. It doesn't work that way. You know, meeting makers don't make it. You know, they just don't. You combine all those things, and I'll talk about that. Combine step work, combine the strict spiritual disciplines of 10, 11, 12, home group, meetings, yes, you know, all three parts. I was reflecting 26 years ago. Actually, at this time, I checked myself into the Montclair Center for Addictive Diseases. Now, that was a nice name, but what they didn't tell me was it was the wing of a nursing home, so it smelled like diapers and shit. And I was happy to be there. I really was. I ran this thing right up to the bitter end. I have worked in the field of addiction for a lot of years, and you know, one of the things when I talk to family members, they don't understand about us. See, you asked me to give up alcohol. You didn't ask me to give up alcohol. You asked me to cut off both arms and give you my heart. And they'll never get that. They'll never understand that. They'll never understand the effect produced. See, and I stay hooked to that. I got to stay hooked to my first step. Why? Because I get in the least bit dis-ease for any long period of time, I still have this reptilian brain that remembers something that'll treat it. And it's always some from the outside coming in. In my case, it was vodka and cocaine. So I've got to keep that interior conditioned at a place where I'm not dis-eased, or I'm going to go back to that which treats me. And nothing else treats me. I don't know what you all's experience is, but I can tell you mine. A lot of God, on an interior level, not belief, a knowing, an experience, conscious contact, or a lot of booze and dope. Nothing in between. You know, other people can do well in, quote, relationships, careers, money, blah, blah, blah. That stuff is ultimately always has left me bereft. There's only two things that fed me. One was alcohol and cocaine, and the other has been God, and that is my experience. And I'll talk with you about that. And my life is a demonstration of that belief system. You know, I don't know if alcohol became your master in cocaine, but it sure was mine. And if you really translate, if you sit and look at that from the first time I took a drink when I was 16, first time I did dope was in Vietnam, did cocaine for 13 years. In hindsight, if I was going to be truthful with myself about it, I may as well have built an altar in my house and put on there some great pictures of lines and mounds of cocaine and vodka, and every morning just bow down and say, alcohol and cocaine, take me where you want. You're more important to me than anything. I serve you. What would you like me to do today? See, I don't think you're looking at some of you. I don't think you're any different than me. This idea of what, well, what's important to you? Oh, my family. Really? No, it's not. It's horseshit. You're lying to yourself. See, you got to touch that, by the way. I don't know anyone who'll stay sober unless you touch this. About if it became your God and you served it. You served it above everybody and everything. You see? You see what I'm saying? Look where it took you. Look what we gave up for it. Right? Children. We gave up careers. We broke our parents. The list goes on and on. You think we did that because we liked its fragrance? See? See, non-alkies, people who care about us, people who work in the business trying to help us, unless they've had that interior experience of what happens when it worked, the first two lines, and you do it, and you see God. See? Unless they've had that experience, they don't understand. Why would you go back to it again? See? Why would you go through that horrific experience, die, almost die, and 5 days later be snorting cocaine again? Why? What is wrong with you? There's nothing wrong with me. I'm going back to that which gives me some degree of ease and comfort, because I live in a body, in a world in which it scares me and terrifies me, and I don't fit and I don't belong, and I got to have something to treat that. See? So that's why I go back to it, you know? That's the way that was. Born and raised in the state of Iowa. Second oldest out of four boys. A lot of alcoholism. Does that have anything to do with me being alky? I'm not quite sure. Or an addict? I certainly have had a physical predisposition, if it will alter how I feel right from the get-go, right from the very first time I took a drink, which is when I was 16 years old. If I had to do it over, I should have done it when I was 10. I wasn't comfortable. You know, this idea, well, go back and look at why you're an alky. Well, first of all, I've got to make me an alcoholic or a cocaine addict. I've got to drink and drugs. You know, this. Well, I was an alcoholic long before I ever took a drink. Where are you getting that information from? Now, you may have been a spoiled, rotten brat, but you weren't an alky and you weren't an addict. That don't happen until you start putting that shit in your body, right? You know? But I, from my earliest memories, I have always been uncomfortable being me. I don't know why, you know? If any of you ever spending time back in the Midwest, it's like going into a time warp. You go back there and everyone talks real slow, and they're not in a hurry. You know, they don't lock doors, and their word is their bond. And I mean, it's like that. It really is like that. It's unbelievable. You know, raised in a town of about 3,000, you know everybody. Those kinds of things. And yet, I'm still just incredibly so uncomfortable in my own skin, not measuring up to anybody or anything. And boy, from the first time I took a drink, it altered that. So I could live with myself. I could have some degree of ease and comfort in your own skin. See, that's the other piece. How many of you got a year or under? Raise your hands. Well, if you're not doing active step work, get after it. Because at the end of the day, if you separate people like us from cocaine and you don't give me a solution that brings about interior change, and all I'm doing is, say, going to meetings, but I'm not really involved in that work to face and be rid of that which has me blocked, steps 4 through 9, some point you're going to get so diseased being clean and sober, your mind's going to give you a solution to how to treat that. And that's called cocaine. You know? What I always laugh, particularly if someone has relapse history, is the idea that we think we know what it looks like the day I'm going to go back and use again. If any of us in this room could predict that day, you have no business being in the room. Right? So I work with a lot of men and women who've had a lot of relapse history in the past. I love to ask them a question, you know, were you involved in your last relapse? And they go, oh yeah, really? You understand what I'm saying? If you know, if you're sitting in this room and you have this idea that you're waking up and choosing to do dope this day, you're probably not an addict. Because the big book's very clear that I lost the power to choose whether I did it or not did it. You know, when I got out of intensive care after a near-death experience behind a cocaine overdose, And I left ICU a day early, and I was drinking alcohol and snorting cocaine then. I did not do that because that was a wise thing to do. See, it's because I wasn't feeling very well in on an inside level. See, forget the physical. Tell that to a normal person. They'll say, well, you need to be locked up. See? Spend a lot of time looking at the effect produced. What happens to me when I snort a line of cocaine? What was the effect produced, Mark? What did it do? And the reason I spent a lot of time looking at it is because I needed to figure out what needed to get treated sober. What are the steps treating in me? What do they do for me? What does this relationship with God do for me? What's this fourth and fifth step going to do? What do these amends do? What are six and seven going to do? What are the disciplines of 10, 11? What are they treating? See, because if that's what it did for me out here, then I better come in this room and I better have a solution that's more powerful than that. Once I accepted the truth of alcohol and cocaine was my master and I served it, once I accepted that truth, how am I going to come over here and serve something else, right? So, but that first time I had a drink altered. Very involved in all kinds of stuff in high school. The next year involved in nothing. See? Because I'd take that drink and I'd get that degree of ease and comfort. Then that phenomenon of craving, of course, I was a lot younger then. So you could drink a lot more and your body could tolerate a lot more. And the very thing that I used to brag about was the thing that was going to kill me. I'd brag about how much I could drink and I was very young, not realizing that's because I'm an alcoholic. Because I take a drink and I break out in a phenomenon called craving. I go back once a year and I revisit the first 9 steps and I go back into that first step and then I remember. Right? Remember when I'm 16 and you're buying all that alcohol and you're driving the car and your friends are all getting drunk and puking and you're drinking yours, theirs, and you're wanting more and you're still driving. Why is that? Well, because they had a normal reaction to alcohol and I was having the abnormal reaction to alcohol. That's why. And you start to see that from the very first time I had a drink, right? See, alcohol treated untreated alcoholism. I was dying of untreated alcoholism prior to my first drink. Thank God for that first drink. You know, some people might disapprove, but I don't really care. You know, if you're not going to immerse yourself in this thing, you better get back out and get after. There ain't no middle of the road. If you were a mad dog for cocaine out there, you better be a mad dog for recovery. You can't do it both ways. You can't have it both ways. Does that make sense? See? I mean, the kind of guy I was is one of my escapades. I'm living in Denver, Colorado. They're having a massive snowstorm. They shut down everything. And me and my brother had some business to take care of in Boulder. That's about 30 miles away. Didn't stop us, right? Barricades, and I'm talking a massive snowstorm. Finally get up there. Didn't get out for 3 days, but that's okay. It was the dealer's house. Lots of stuff there. See, I was willing to go to that length to break any and every law I had to do to get the cocaine. You follow me? Then you come in the rooms and I do a couple meetings. I do a thing called Steel on Steel, and I sponsor this guy, and he sponsors a bunch of guys. And we're sitting there doing Steel on Steel, and we're going around, we're talking about how many meetings we're going to. And I got 26 years, and he's got 23, and most of these people have between 5 years and under. We're going to more meetings and far more involved than them. I looked at him and said, are you idiots? See, you get sober. I don't know what you had when you came in. I had a duffel bag because I snorted the rest of that shit up. I snorted up family. I snorted up friends. I snorted up everything. I had a duffel bag. And then you get all these blessings, and now you're going to use the blessings as a reason for why you're not involved. It's horse shit. You get what I said? See? Well, I've got a wife and kids now. Yeah, and if you want to keep them, you probably better get involved. You understand what I mean? You know? I've got good news and bad news for you. Anyone who gets involved in your life, you better get very clear with them about your first step. Don't paint some picture you're going to be like Joe Blow or Sally Smith down the street, because you're not. Because you want to stay clean and sober, you're probably going to have to do what people like myself and Chris and a bunch of other people in here do. Probably going to have to be involved doing this till your ass dies. I've observed some things about people who die with long-term sobriety. You know what they are? Real complex stuff. Here's what it looks like. They still are very actively involved working the steps out of the big book. Most of them still have a sponsor and or a lot of accountability. Most of them have a home group. Most of them go to their group conscience. Most of them still do 3 to 5 to 7 meetings. Don Pritz, when he died, was doing 5 meetings a week. Most of them work and rework 1 through 9 on a consistent basis. Big Frank dies with 42 years, the group he belonged to, 80 strong in Denver. Take 1 month every year, rework 1 through 9. That whole group did it, share 5th steps with each other. That's what they have in common. Right? Everyone I know, whoever dies with long-term sobriety, they're still immersed in the program. The reason I'm immersed in the program still to this day, and I will be until the spirit leaves this body, is very simple. I don't ever want to go down the road that alcohol and cocaine takes me down. And on my own power, I can't prevent myself from going down the road. So even all the blessings that get heaped on me, I have no right to use those blessings as reasons to why I've changed my involvement. You get that? See? I'll probably share this a little bit with you, but between my 9th and 10th year, I was having so much fun with untreated alcoholism, I went to a psychiatric hospital in Houston, Texas. And I had great insurance, and they had me locked in there. Spent 40 days in there. Critical part of the whole turning point. Really did a third step in there. Really did a third step. Why? What do I mean when he says really did a third step? Think about this. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me, and you do with me as you want. You know what that means? It means your life is not your business. You know, we hear that neat saying? That's what it really means. It means where I live, where I work, who's in my life, who's not in my life, is no longer my business. My business is to help the next recovery, sick, suffering, alcoholic, dope fiend that shows up in front of my ass. That's my business. I got no other business. But I can't do that unless I'm clean and sober, can I? So I got 2 things I got to do. I got to stay immersed in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, do what the book says, then I have to carry that message to as many people as I can. And if I do that, all the rest gets added unto me. That's a simple deal. Some of you have been sober for a while, have had that experience where you want to get over-involved with your life, with the career, with her, whatever. How's that work for you? It doesn't work for me. See? I read for years, you know, seek ye first the kingdom, the rest will be added. I know what that means today. It means seek ye first the kingdom and the rest will be added. simple stuff. Finish high school, go on to college, drinking, having fun. Normally a college degree takes 4 years. I was in my 6th year. I was busy, and I transferred colleges. You know, I lived in 7 different states when I got sober, so I used to get resentful at the early members and their stories because, you know, like Dr. Bob, he makes his amends in like a day. Well, shit, he lived in the same town his entire life, right? I don't know about some of you, but you try 7 states. So there's a few little things you got to do, but I had this belief system somehow that if I moved over here, it would get better. See? I had the same belief system around wives. I've had 4. See? It's never been about any of that. It's always about this interior condition. Big book talks about page 25. Carl Jung describes what has to happen to us. A complete rearrangement of ideas and emotions and attitudes get cast to one side. Doesn't matter where you go. You see? Because there you are. That old saying? See? But I used to do that. I go, just about the time it's all catching up with me, I'm going to another state and giving you my great story of why I should be in that state. So I kept doing that many, many times. But that little thing was going on called Vietnam, and I came from a small county in Iowa. So they drafted me. And that was an interesting experience. I remember going to... I got pretty much into a daily drinker very, very early on. I certainly was doing that. And I think I had to go about 7 weeks before I had a brewski. And that was a long time. And then I got sent to, addition to Fort Polk, Louisiana, into Fort Benning, Georgia. And then I got orders for NOM. And then I went back home and I picked up a drink. And 44 days later, I stopped drinking. It, the craving, let go of me. Right? Sometimes I sit in rooms and I hear what I think is, what would be the right term? Delusion about this idea of relapse. and I could relapse and come back into the room. Really. You could be like the young man that sat across from me the other day, that the last time that he shot cocaine, he OD'd, and he laid on his father's bathroom for 14 hours, and by the time they got to him, he had turned blue, and there's about 3 feet of a sciatic nerve that doesn't work, so now he's in a wheelchair, spent about 2 weeks in a coma. He's 23 years old. See, this idea that we think we know how long I'll be back out there and the consequences of it, you stay around long enough. See, I don't even care to go down that road. I reported to Oakland, California, and then they shipped me over to Vietnam. Spent 13 and a half months over there, came back from there, went back to the University of South Dakota and finished up, married my college sweetheart and roared off to California with a new Volkswagen and $150 in my pocket. You know, it's like old Bill and Lois on the motorcycle. But see, I took this little thing along with me. I took along this thing that on a daily basis, a lot of us don't talk to anyone about it, and that's how you're experiencing yourself on an interior level. The voices, right? Remember the first time I heard a guy named Bob Earl say, if you said to me what I said to me, I'd have to kill you. See, and I got that shit going on all day. And I don't know where this one comes. This was a big one. They're going to find out who you really are. And they'll broom your ass. And she'll leave. And no one will ever ask you to speak again. I don't know where that voice comes from. But you got that kind of dialogue going all the time, right? And that's what you're taking out into the world. See? So I get a job with a major insurance company as a claims adjuster in San Francisco. So now I hear him wearing suits, this Iowa farm kid with these wonderful voices talking to me, right? Trying to operate in a world that terrified me. My drinking and drug use accelerated. I got introduced to drugs in Vietnam. Primarily over there, I did pot a couple times. I smoked heroin. Don't care for my deal's juice. Give me juice, something to go with the vodka. So anything that was a downer, you know, give it away. I didn't want nothing to do with it. Didn't have me, my head buzzing and humming. It wasn't going to be a part of my deal. A lot of my deal with cocaine, though, had to do with the drinking, you know. And that job lasted about 10, 11 months. And then I'd met a guy that went to work for another company and wound up taking the job and relocating to Oregon. Then I had a great job for someone who was newly introduced to cocaine and who was already full-blown into their alcoholism. I was driving a big Bonneville, and working for a company in the state of Oregon was my territory. I had an expense account and a big car, and there I went, you know. And then as my alcoholism and drug addiction progressed, I began to compromise all moral values that I was raised with. Every one of us in this room knows the difference between right and wrong. We've known it since birth. We know it right now. Everyone is in this room today. If, in fact, you did something to violate a truth, for example, maybe it was a simple lie. Maybe you told someone you were going to call them and didn't. I promise you, a part of you went, you didn't call him, you're a liar, boom, right? See, we've all known that. And I began to compromise all these things, all these values. And then you got more of those voices, right? And they're talking to you. And there's more drinking and there's more drugs. And it's only a matter of time until I walk up to that woman and I say, I got to go. Remember I told you, see, you got that voice doing that. And you're putting alcohol and drugs first in front of your life. At some point, it's all got to go. Because you got to serve what you got to serve. You got to serve your master, right? So she had to go. I'm not a man of regrets. I'm really not. Regrets implies you had a choice. Get what I just said? Regrets imply you have a choice. Remorse implies you had a choice. Big Book says, I'm being driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, and I see that, see? Drove me up to Seattle. Still doing all right in the business world. Still driving the car. Wearing some suits. Still earning some good money. Drinking more and more cocaine. I tell people I'm grateful for cocaine. It got me into the rooms of AA 10 years ahead of time. It bottomed me out. Hard, fast. You know, you can only drink so much alcohol. Seriously. Then you're done. You had cocaine to that mix, now you got a whole nother world going on, right? From the state of Washington, I migrated to Alaska. If you're an alcoholic and a drug addict, that gets to be a very interesting place to live and experience your addiction. Summertime, it's always daylight. It's a little weird. Walk out of a bar at 3 in the morning, looks like this. You get a little confused. Appointment you had at 3 in the afternoon, you're trying to make it 3 a.m. in the morning. You can't tell the difference. Shit like that starts to happen to you. Boy, and that was the beginning of the end. Because it was daily and there was a lot of it and they couldn't quit. And then it began to all show up. And then that job ended. And then I wound up going back to Colorado and living at home for a little bit. And then I conned one more company into hiring me. Company out of Houston, Texas. And worked for them for about 1 year. And tell you how I quit that job. I took a company car that looked like it had been in a demolition derby and left it in their parking lot with the keys on the wheel. That's how I left that job, right? Which I made amends to that company. Told them I'd pay them back an entire year's salary because they put lucky if they got 16 hours of work out of me that year, right? But by then, alcohol and cocaine had consumed my life and I couldn't work. So I began to attempt to find people who could take care of me. At their various times, I'd dip in and out of living at my parents' home. And then you're living with those voices, right? Because I'm a male, adult alpha male. For God's sakes, having to live with mom and dad, you're 32, 33 years old, or go to them for money, right? You're dealing with that stuff. A few apartments. And it's getting worse, and it's getting worse, and it's getting worse, and I can't quit. Finally, I met a gal one night on a Friday in the Bennigan's. Moved in with her on Monday. Married her about 2 months after that. I need a place to stay. It's true. She needed someone to fix. Some of you have had those relationships. They work for just a little while. And nowhere in the middle of that was I at least been interested in not drinking and not doing drugs. Started doing some dealing along the way, get involved in that whole thing. But I tell you what happened was the magic that used to come along with that whole deal had begun to leave me probably 2-3 years prior to that. Now, I don't know if some of you have had this experience of drinking huge amounts of alcohol or doing a lot of lines and nothing happened. And it's like, whoa, this is not good. The very thing it was treating, nothing is happening, and now there's nothing I can do to stop. See? So what happened to me? At that time, she had a job, sent me to see a therapist. She listened to my bullshit for about 10 minutes, looked me dead in the eye and says, you're an alcoholic and a drug addict, and you are very sick and you need detox and rehab. Here's the name, a couple places, get out of my office, I can't help you. So I went to the bar and drank at her. See, you know, this may sound crazy, but in the middle of all that, quite frankly, never once did I tell myself I was an alcoholic or a drug addict. It was always about somehow if this will change and this will change, if this will get right, if this will get right, and if I'll manage it. But by then, you see, that life had become normal. Now, everyone who knew me had slowly all begin to leave. See? So that became normal. About 2 weeks after that happened, I got 12-step by a Christian evangelicist in Denver, Colorado. It was just like the story with Bill. He brought his Bible in, and there was a big revival movement going on in the Church of the Nazarene. And I figured my drinking could outlast his rambling, you know. And stole his Bible, too, by the way. I think he was actually glad I had it, though, you know. To make a long story short, then, my wife wound up driving me to this church. This is a mammoth church. Holds like 2,000 people. I don't know if you've had this, too, but as I was getting toward the end, I had a lot of auditory hallucinations. It would look like this. I'd go to the grocery store, and all of a sudden, I'd hear a voice go, "Mark!" Nobody. It's getting weird. It's getting weirded up. So, you know, you're like you're walking into this church, and church, you can probably tell already, was not a place I frequented. I was raised a Methodist, became a Catholic, and sued a gal in one of my marriages because I want something, I will go to any lengths. And Vietnam and all the rest of it, I was just ambivalent. I just didn't much care. You know, you do whatever you want with the God issue, just leave me out of the deal. And but I was not a frequent visitor of those institutions, so I was a tad uncomfortable as we begin to walk through the doors and the voices, you know.
Hope nobody sees us. Right?
You know, that delusion we operate under. See, that's as crazy as, you know, I sponsor guys, right? And they'll go to meetings and you know, they'll share in the meeting. They come up afterwards and they only do this to me one time. They go, "How'd I sound?" And I said, "What do you mean, how did you sound?" "Well, did what I say make sense?" And I said, "I don't know, and I doubt anyone else knows." And they'll go, "Well, why do you say that?" And I said, "You're in a room full of the most selfish, self-centered, self-obsessed people who are in internal dialogue to 99% of the meeting. Nobody heard a goddamn word you said." You're concerned about what they think about what you said. Y'all get that? "Well, I'm afraid to speak in a meeting." "Why?" See? Crazy. They're crazy. But so we go in and sit down, and they do all their stuff. A huge, huge stage. And, you know, and then there's always they always build up to this, you know, and they're going to do the altar calls and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just kind of sitting there to do the altar call, and my body gets up responding to the altar call. You know, it's like, I don't know if you've had this experience, but in the latter years of my drinking and drug use, my body did things that I didn't have any say in. It just did. And, that happened to be one of them, and the voice is screaming, "Someone will see you. What are you doing, you dumbass?" You know, walking down the altar, you know, and you get down, there's 8, 9, 10, and they're clanging and doing all that shit, and people jumping. I just threw myself in the middle of all of it. Sure, bring it on. Why not? What the hell, right? You know, and but I tell you what, I think they tricked me a little bit that night. They gave me a little white Bible, and basically they have their own third step. It said, "I give my life over to Jesus," boom, boom, boom. They had you sign and date the thing, and I did, you know, just to get the hell away from them, right? Well, I learned a spiritual law that night. The universe responds to that kind of stuff. That's why I think the big book warns you and I in the third step. Think carefully before you say this shit. So any of you who haven't done it, think carefully before you say what you say to this universe, because that happened on September 28th and the morning of October 19th, 1982. I checked myself into a detox. The obsession to drink and do cocaine was removed from me that morning, October 19th, and never once has it ever come back. Ever. See? You know, and I mean, God does what God does. I don't have this story of these deep, meaningful dialogues with God. "Oh, please help me stop." That's not my story. My story feels more like God said, "You dumb son of a bitch, I got stuff I got you to do, and you ain't ever going to get this." Boom! That's what it felt like to me, in hindsight. And remove that, and I go into the detox, and, you know. Denver was a good place for me to sober up. When I sobered up in 82, it was different than now. Really, it started to shift and move and change more, I'd say, in the early 90s. But what was different about it was pretty no-nonsense. Back then, if you had less than 90 days, you didn't speak at the meetings I was going to. And the chairperson shared, you wandered off, started talking about something other than the topic, boom, right to the next one, right? Somebody needed to run the show, and it wasn't me, right? See, we've lost that. To me, we've lost that. What in the hell did I know? What did I have to offer, right?
Well, what I have.
You know, it's, I mean, I couldn't hit my ass with both hands. See? Took me 2-3 years for my brain and body to even get close to getting back to normal. However, if you'd asked me in those first couple of years how I was doing, I'd said, good, you know. But I fell in with some people who were real solid on the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Met Don Pritz, passed away now, Joe Hawk. Joe had gone to the rehab that I went to a little bit ahead of time. Thank God I fell in with those guys. Another guy named Gary. Another guy named Peter. Joe died sober, and the other two gentlemen, myself, are still sober. A guy named Jeff. We go to a lot of meetings. We begin to do some step work. You know, the other thing I'm seeing over time, you know, if you're fairly new, get after and get through the steps. Got the rest of your life to continue to work and rework and rework. But if you're new, you need power. Don't take a lot of time, you know. Your first step, you know, the craving of the body, the obsession of the mind. It's not rocket scientist stuff, you know. When you drink or do cocaine, do you have power, choice, control, or how much you do?
No.
Well, because you have a physical allergy. It dooms you to consume the bag you're going to sell. You know? And it will never be different. See, so I don't know about the rest of you. I used to sell cocaine to people that didn't have that. See, there's this idea everyone does cocaine as an addict. That's bullshit. You know? All kinds of people do cocaine, they're not addicts, right? Not us. We're garbage heads, you know.
Yeah, that happened to me.
Well, then why didn't you quit?
Well, I couldn't.
Why? Well, that's an obsession of the mind. Right? Do I commit the most insane act of my life sober? See, cocaine insanity sober looks like you commit the most insane act of your life stone cold sober. You have nothing in your body. Your mind says, let's go do drugs. And you act on that because you have no choice. If you don't get that, you won't do the rest of this work. You understand what I just said to you? If I'm going to commit the most insane act of my life, stone cold sober, what in the hell hope do I have unless a power comes into my life? That's why you do the rest of the steps. See? That's why. See, I got that. Stone cold sober, at my best, with a long list of reasons. I have a voice and a mind that'll take me back on my own power. Don't matter what the consequences are. Consequences don't prevent us from doing that. I don't care what they are. I don't care if it's jail, loss of relationship. Not if cocaine's been your master. You think if cocaine's been your master and someone threatens you with consequences, that has any power? I don't think so. Go back to your master. Ask your master what it says. Cocaine says, screw her. Right? She's gone. Screw the job. Right? Your parents never did understand you. Right? You know the long, you know how cocaine, when it talks to you, right? When it does its thing? Because it owned your ass. If you did it like I did it. See, you wake up to that. See? It doesn't take a long time to look at that. Look at the stuff on page 52, your internal condition. Right? How is it? How is it in personal relationships? The one with yourself. How was it when you came here tonight? You meet someone new. Are you comfortable? Are you comfortable in your own skin? Can you look people in the eye? Or is there distance between you and others? Are you afraid when you're going to work all the time? Afraid to sponsor? You know, you start asking yourself these questions about where it really counts. The only fucking place it counts, inside you. Not the bullshit you throw out to me. How you doing? I'm doing fine. What? Right? You know, I'm amazed our rooms aren't full of more tissues. You know what I'm saying? How you doing? Oh, God. You know, I got a job today. Shit, they're going to find out who I really, you know, I mean. Chill like that, you know. Prey to misery and depression. You start to look at all that stuff. You know, you don't have to look at it a long time. Is this you? Do I drink and do drugs to treat that condition? Yeah, absolutely. Is, in fact, that condition a manifestation of my selfishness? I don't know. Do I need power? Yeah. So you see your need for power, steps 2 through 12, come about as a result of me seeing my need for power. No other reason. There's no other reason I would move into 2 through 12. That's why one-third of the big book is devoted to you and I finding out the truth about the first step. Is this me? Am I a real addict? Am I a real alcoholic, right? Is this guy me? Do I need power? Yeah. See, because then what you have is you have an open door for the rest of the steps because of your need for power. You're not going to debate anymore. You're not going to argue anymore. You're going to be looking at somebody who has power, and you're going to want some of that juice. You get that? So you're going to want some of that juice. You know, over the years, at times, I meet people that say, well, I want what you have. Well, I got it. Then you're going to have to do what I want to do.
Well, I don't want to do that.
Crazy. See? Remember, it's all about this interior change. You're going to have to do the same things that I had to do. The same, very same things the Big Book says. See? So once I had my first step experience right up to today, it got me very open-minded about moving to the rest of the process. Second step, you know, is there a power greater than myself who can take me past here? Am I willing to believe that? If you need power, there's only one response to that. You're not in the God debate class at that time. You know, I was a long time sober before I realized one of the greatest hindrances to experiencing God is you telling yourself you believe in God. Pay attention to what I just told you. One of the greatest hindrances to experiencing God is your mind telling you you believe in God. The movement is one side of the planet to the other. It's like knowing everything there is to know about an orange but never tasting it, but you want to tell me about the orange. Then you talk to someone who's tasted the orange. Two different experiences, right? So that's the second step. Because of my need for power, I got very open-minded about the God issue. I hear that. So, well, I'm struggling with the God issue. No, you're not. You haven't had a first step experience. You have a first step experience, you know, dip, dunk, sprayed, neutered to find God. Because of where, because if you don't, what's your option? Your option is you're going to go back and serve your other master, right? Second step, you got two masters you want to serve. Which one is it? See? Big Book, that we agnostics, by the way, is one of the most profound pieces of literature I've ever read. That chapter is unbelievable. I had several years of spiritually intoxicated, and I can't tell you how many books I devoured in that process, and I keep reading We Agnostics, and it is such a profound body of work. But it takes people like us who want to argue with everything, most of which we know nothing about, and it says, okay, you see your need for power? Well, I think so. Right? You believe there's a power greater than yourself? Well, okay, maybe I'll concede that. And then it's very wise. It says you get to invent God. We agnostics come up with your own concept of God, right? God says, oh, I know who I'm working with. These people who think they know everything. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to let them invent me in the second step. See? There's no other way they'll come to me. Right? So you go, oh, okay. See, and then you're a little later on, we at the back of We Agnostics. See, the book constantly, it's like a vortex. They pull you in, you know, and then you get down to, okay, now you're faced with a self-imposed crisis. Well, I didn't like that. Self-imposed. See, the book, starting with that question, by the way, the rest of the book, it's about you. It's not about them. You know how we come in and it's always about our first and second column? Faced with a self-imposed crisis. What's that? I drank the whiskey. I snorted the cocaine. Etc., etc., etc. Self-imposed. I can't postpone or evade. Fearlessly faced the proposition, God's either everything or he's nothing. Whew. These guys are a little serious about this shit, right? Go back to your first step. See? You're like this. See? Okay. Ooh, ooh. Yeah, he's everything. See, and you say that, you don't have a clue what you're saying. I do. See? I do now. See, God is everything. Everything in my life is under that umbrella. Everything. Including my sinning. Everything is under that umbrella. Anything I don't place under that gets taken. Right? That's the second step. Goes on, you know, I can't define or comprehend it. See? Then I come up to the third step, to that decision. Once again, the way that thing is laid out is amazing to me about introducing me finally to the root of what the hell is wrong with me, right? You don't have to take a lot of time necessarily to look at that. I'm selfish and I'm self-centered. Do you know they wait till like page 60, 61, 62. See, I think I'm in the rooms because I snort cocaine and drink vodka. They go, no. That ain't why you're in the rooms. That's a symptom. You're in the rooms because you're a selfish, self-centered son of a bitch. And when you come at the world that way, the world doesn't operate that way. You wind up becoming resentful and at odds with everybody and everything, and you get diseased, that internal condition. And because everything's always about you, that disease and angst is so intense in you, there's only one way to treat it, and you snort cocaine. Whoa! Now I saw the connection, right? Now I saw the connection. Going through life being driven, think I'm making choices. You see that? I'll give you something for some of you to consider who are sitting here sober thinking you're making choices. Just take the last 12 months and make a list of all the neat choices you made. You may find that you were driven on a few of them. See? Nothing worse than being sober think you're making choices. See? Take a look at that. Driven by what? 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. Then that spotlight that begins to shine only one way, right here. All my troubles are my own making. What a fabulous statement of hope that is. Y'all get that? You know why that's so powerful? All my troubles are my own making. Why would that be powerful? What happens if any trouble, any A-N-Y troubles are outside you? What's wrong with that then? See, if all my troubles are my own making, then I can have an effective change on that, can't I? But if it's anything out here, I can't. See, I love that. I stand in the light and the power of that. You know, people say to me, how's your day? I say, incredible, but it's going to get better. Big book, promise of the big book. The best years of Mark's life lie ahead of him. Boy, they do. Why? Because I'm involved with it. Because all my troubles are my own making. See, what a way to come at life. What a way to live. There's power in that. See, it's not about out here anymore. Right? So you look at that. All my troubles are my own making. Above everything, got to get rid of my selfishness. I don't know why we don't talk about this, these two or three lines in there. Above everything, I got to get rid of my selfishness or it. My selfishness kills my ass. K-I-L-L-S. Right? Why don't we talk about that more? That's where relapse happens. Selfishness. It will kill me. See? And then you talk about having to have God's help, and then it described my third step decision. You know how we get God's help? I quit playing God. Give you another exercise you can have some fun. Make a list. Take the phrase, how am I playing God, and just start looking at the areas of your life, and I'll bet some of you may be surprised to find that you have certain areas of your life you're still playing God in. Well, if my boss would only act different, and she would act different, and blah, blah. You see? I got to quit playing God. What does that mean? What does that look like? Yeah. It means you got to quit playing God. See? We don't decide who gets sober, who doesn't. Right? No attachment to the fruit of my labor. See? I don't get to decide who's in my life and who's not. I only get to decide what am I bringing to the relationship. What am I bringing to the table? Not what you're bringing. So programs are, well, what am I bringing to the table? Not what can I get. What am I bringing? What am I bringing? That's what life's about. See? What am I bringing? Prayer of St. Francis. What am I bringing? Not what am I getting? It's that one of those paradoxes, right? The more I give, the more I get. The more I give, the more I get. See? Then you make that decision. See? Think about what those words. God, I offer myself to thee. Build with me and do with me as you will. And then he does, and we get mad and bring it to our meetings. Don't we? Relationships, job, you know. I told you, the book warns you about that third step. See? I tell you, that whole thing got very easy for me, really. How many of you got kids? Raise your hands. Okay? If your 2 or 3 year old had a real sharp knife, would you take it away? Right? And they'd do what? Yeah, that's me and you. When God's taking those sharp knives away. My case has been jobs, women, states, all kinds of stuff. See? Thy will be done. Thy will be done. God giveth, God taketh away. Thy will be done. Thy will be done. Even in the middle of a shit storm, thy will be done. See? Can I do that? Why, first of all, why would we do that? I'll tell you why. Because that God is a lot better master than the first one I had, which was alcohol and cocaine. That's why. See? Incredible prayer. You launch into inventory. Now you start to see why you drink and do cocaine. Right? Resentment inventory. Four column, long list. People, institutions, principles. Pissed off at everybody and everything. You know? My arrangements would have only stayed put. If only people do as I wished. Right? The group's not doing it the way. Blah, 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 blah. Right? Amazing. Okay. Nice alkies and drug addicts scare me. Because I know I know better. You know what I mean about the nice ones. Oh, how you doing, Mark? So good to see you. That's what I love, too. You hear this cliche, we're people pleasers, right? You ever heard that shit? How does that correspond with selfishness, self-centered, the root of my troubles? Do those two fit in the same box? No. If we're people pleasers, why are we doing it? Because I want something and to please me. That's why. There's no other. I'm not a people pleaser. I'm a Mark pleaser. See? See, think about this. There's a whole chapter devoted to me getting out of Mark because Mark's the whole problem. See, it's no different today. About the only time I do something without a selfish motive is by mistake. See? It's still no different. You know, I got to sit across, listen to a fifth step. You got to take two, three, four, whatever time you're going to take. And the voices start. Oh, Jesus, here we go, another one. And he's such a whiner. You know, you have all that. You know, but then he comes over and you do the prayer and you get into it and he leaves and you're on cloud nine and you got free from yourself for 5 hours. And you stay high for a week. That's why there's a whole chapter devoted to working with others. Because I get to get away from Mark. See? Whoa. See, Mark doesn't exist for a few hours. That's why going when you come to meetings, new people, greet them. Get out of yourself. Everything you do, turn out of yourself. You know, make them feel welcome. See? Turn your meeting into a meeting that somebody would want to come back to, for God's sakes. Make it a meeting about power. Make it a meeting about magnificent things happening in your life as a result of working the steps and being immersed in the program. Talk about those kinds of things. If you're new, that's the kind of stuff I want to hear. You follow me? See? Talk about the new car you got. Right? You understand what I'm saying? See, if we got new people coming in, what's going to keep them here? See? You better be talking about power. You better be giving them a real solution. Guy like me comes in the room, you know, I got broad shoulders and a big ass. You better be bringing it. You better be giving me something that's going to speak to me. Better be about power. See, or I'm going back to the master that I've been serving. So talk to me about that. Talk directly to me, right? Give me a solution. Give me something, you know. It better be a hell of a lot more. Okay, giving back, you know. I mean, I still remember I went to Kerrville and Chris and myself and two other guys. It was a little group. Carry the message group, and we wound up taking that group over, showed up for a group conscious, and we had all the votes, and hell, like 2 years later, a little town of Kerrville, there's 70, 80 people strong in there. You know, we were doing workshops, going through the steps together, and then coming down to San Antonio and hooking up with Carson, a guy named Mike Fisher, bless his heart, he died the alcoholic death. You know, Brother Ed and Carrie and a bunch of people and walking into, you know, Club 12. By the way, if you're going to share your experience with the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, don't expect to be liked. You got to get past that. See, walking into Club 12 and be sitting in some meetings and I'm going, what in the hell is this? You know, wasn't A&A, you know. Just sharing the message and just not giving a shit, you know, sharing the message. And then it speaks, see, because there's a guy in that room, he needs real power, and he hears it, you know. I still remember when Lewis R. came up to me, and we sit down and chat for a little bit. Yeah, yeah. And I'm talking to him, and, you know, I can't remember. He was probably 45 years old. I think he had eight amends. I said, eight amends? Shit, you have more people than that in your blood family. You know?
You know, he's all depressed and mopey. And,
you know, just, you know, carry a message of hope. But, man, we started doing that, going into meetings, groups of us. Carrying the message out of our big book, carrying our experience with us, saying there's more, damn it, there's more. There's power in this program. You can stay clean and sober, and you can help others, and your life can get amazing. And you can live with what life deals you, you know, with a set of precise, specific, clear-cut instructions. You know, wow, what a deal that is, see? Be able to stand or be 26 years without a drink and a line of cocaine. What an incredible thing, you know. Been able to travel all over the world, you know. Hell, when I sobered up, I would have had to be cremated because I couldn't have found six people to carry my damn casket. And if I died today, I'll bet you I could find plenty more than that. See, this program, the book, the fellowship, all the friends that I have met over the years, you know, what an incredible life I have. Beyond my wildest dreams. How do I do that? I stay in the trenches. I take time on my birthday, you know. 2-hour drive one way, 2-hour drive back. Why would I do that? Give, 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 give. Because there may be just one of you in here that tonight that needed to hear, you know what, there is power in this room and in these books and through those steps. And yes, I want some of that. I want some of what that guy's talking about, whatever the hell it was, see? Because that's in there, you know? God, a light beyond your wildest dreams, see? There's a lot of different ideas about the process. Find a sponsor who works out of the big book. It's not the big book, it ain't. That's basically where I come from with the whole deal, you know? A lot of people say, you're so hard and rigid. Not really, you know. I just follow what was in the big book, the set of precise, specific instructions. I work with the spiritual disciplines at 10 or 11, you know. To this day, Monday through Friday, 4:45, feet on the floor, upon awakening, go through, do the prayers, consider my plan for the day. Thy will be done. Read the 10th step, right? Enter the world of the Spirit. The game is on when I walk out my front door using the 10 step all day long as I go through my day. Sit with meditation. Normally 2 times a day. Do an evening review. Why? Because those are the disciplines I have to do to stay in fit spiritual condition. If I believe the book and I do, the only reason I'm standing here clean and sober is because I'm in fit spiritual condition. I'm responsible for that, not God. Get that? I am. You know? Well, it's been 5 minutes. That's horse shit. See? Do that in your next life. Don't try it in this one. See? I got good news and bad news for some of you. You know, it's like we get to live 2 lives. It's call it Zorba the Buddha. See, I lived a life of Zorba. Now I got to live the life of Buddha. And I need to get over what I think and how I feel about that. And I need to get my feet on the floor if I want all the promises in this book, which start in the title page. And I got to put some time in. I got to spend some time with that which created me, that which sustains me. Can't do that 5 minutes in the shower or driving down 410. Oh, I'd meditate in the car. What? No. I don't have time for God. You know, it's just the very light. Remember, I told you the very blessings and the gifts we've been given. I now use as a reason to not spend any time with God. Right. You know, give you another exercise. Spend an extra 15 minutes with God in the morning next week. Watch what happens. I love solitude. Why? So that I can get replenished and I can get refreshed and get recharged so I can come back out amongst you and love you and give to you and have an awareness about you so I'm not consumed with me. See? Recharge the batteries. Interior solitude, interior freedom, interior power. Remember, in we agnostics, the great reality is deep down within. The final analysis, it is only there God may be found. There's never a time I'm not in church, and there's never a time you're not in church. Because there's never a time that we can't experience God if you're not blocked from God. Being sober is the neatest thing in the world. I got tough problems today. I go into a closet now, and there's way too many pairs of shoes. It's a tough decision. When I came here, I had one old rotten pair of tennis shoes, see? God damn it, I love being sober. And, you know, that coat, I'm looking at a closet. There's 9 of them. I love being sober. You see? Love everything about it. Which car to drive? Had no car the first 2 years. See, I'd give you a shitload of reasons why I love being clean and sober, you know? Taught me about financial sanity. Everything I learned. I learned in these rooms with the teachers and the mentors in my life. They stand me in good stead when I get into self-delusion. I get way off to the side. You know, Chris and I have ridden many trails together. He and I are no different than any of you. And any given day, you know, we'll be like David Koresh. We'll start our own compound. See, we pull each other back. No. Stay in. I had one of those periods. I was going to quit and be a monk, you know, and those guys, fortunately, they saved me from that experience. Had a Bernie Bush experience, and I was firmly convinced exactly what I was supposed to be doing, you know. Chris and those guys did steal and steal, and I informed them of my decision, and they said, "Are you fucking crazy?" Excuse me for the language, but that's just, thank God. See, you better have pals like that in your life, you know, as you go along. You know, the rule 62, don't take yourself so damn serious. As far as I know, ladies and gentlemen, this seems to be the only game in town. What do I mean by this? I mean our lives, our life. See, I think that's it. Love it all. Love the pain, love the sadness, love the joy, love it all. You know, you look at a grave, you got the day you're born, the day you're dying, a dash. What are you doing with your dash? Damn it, you better make it vibrant. You better make it alive. Stop whining, bitching, moaning, complaining. Tap into power. Bring it into rooms. Bring it into your life. Every day, you should have 9 pages of gratitude. Breath. The list is endless. Make that your life then, your dash. That's the question. What the hell did you do with your dash today? What's it going to be like when you leave? What's your dash look like, see? God, get involved with that. All this stuff in the book. Work the steps. Tap into this power. Live a life beyond your wildest dreams. It's all there. Oh, do you still drink and go to meetings? No! It's not in the book. The book talks about power, peace, happiness, sense of direction, recovered. The list is endless about the promises. Right? Look the world in the eye. Be alone at perfect peace and ease. See? Love thy neighbor. Incredible promises. Peppered through the whole damn thing. They're there for every one of us. God ain't got no grandchildren. See, if you want what we have, do what we do. It's that simple. See? It's that simple. Ain't nobody special in the rooms of AA. Some are willing to do more work than others. See? Some are willing to do more work. Remember that. It's there for each and every one of you. God bless you. I love you.
Now that I know that I've needed you. think there's a way I can try to repay all I've taken from you. Maybe, Lord, I can show someone else what I've been through myself on my way back.